There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Hey, kids! Welcome to Tops and Bottoms! Do you like superheroes? Sure you do! Do you like the Avengers? Of course not! They're totally unradical and non-awesome! What? You like cool, with it superheroes, like the ones here at MM Comics, the comic company with attitude.
Uh-oh.
Thrill, the adventures of the super fighting guys, with Spooner Man, Master of Soup, Bauxite Guy and his crumbly white armor, the inedible Chunk, Lady Potato Bug, deadly Kazakhstanian enemy of tubers, and of course, Blore, god of trundle beds. Yes, Mike and I are starting our own comic book company. I'll be the Stan Lee of the company, and Mike will be the Jack Kirby. In other words, he'll come up with all the ideas, and I'll make everyone think I did it, because I'm a genius! Run out and tell our private comic distribution company, Swarovski Crystal Comics, to deliver a truckload to your house now. Until then, let's talk about the biggest earner of 2018, Avengers Infinity War. What kind of lame-ass superheroes would have a title like that? I'm your host, microcephalic Max Levine, and over there, chained to his drafting table, is Mike, the fifth Viscount Luce. Come on, Mike. Let's sing the Manic Max Mike Mercantile Society song. Oh.
Lady Potato Bug?
Yep. She's not at all a ripoff of Black Widow.
Okay.
Nope. Lady These guys Potato are Bug. Awesome. Spooner Man, Master Spoon. Of Soup.
Soup. Is soup on all fours or?
Nope. It's full of noodles and chickeny goodness.
What, you think soup's a biped? I don't know.
It could be.
Yeah, okay. But,
but before we get to the adventures of Spooner Man,
no.
let's get to our poll question.
Poll question.
We want to know, desperately, who is your favorite Star Wars character and why? Besides Glup Shitto.
you can't have him.
That fine Irish Jedi of a lad, Beelolading, says, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my..." You know the rest.
Yeah.
Princess Leia
it's
is Star
two
Wars.
Words. Some contraction.
You're my...
Only hope.
Plus one.
No.
My best friend.
You're
my,
fired, that's what you are.
Princess Leia is Star Wars' greatest character without question. Carrie Fisher had an iconic look, both alien and familiar. Her iconic white robes, cinnamon bun hairstyle, and regal presence. How often do you think the words cinnamon bun hairstyle and regal presence are in the same sentence?
I thought it was
are
a
Are instantly recognizable and will endure in cinema forever. It could have easily stopped there and been a throwaway role. But Fisher was allowed to give the role intelligence, cunning, courage, and absolute seriousness. He's also an exceptional marksman, never missing a shot through the entire series. Falling for Han Solo adds humanity without diminishing her independence or strength. They're both such strong loners. Their exchange of, "I love you," and the reply of, "I know," is the best line of the series. "I will die on this hill." Well, you should get off the hill then if you're going to die there.
Yeah.
Even forced into the infamous metal slave bikini, Leia refuses victimhood. Ultimately killing her captor herself with her own slave chains. That is pretty badass. Leia transforms every challenge into proof that dignity, determination, and leadership always outshines circumstance. She's just the best. Beak me up, Scotty.
Beak me up?
That's what he wrote. I'm so,
the K's not even... Oh, it's above the M. I suppose it could have been that.
Well...
Seriousness all the time, huh? So isn't she the one who said, "Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?" Or, yeah. "You came in that thing, you're braver than I thought." That's the
serious
one?
Yeah, she also
one?
Okay. Calls Solo, she uses the N-word on him.
Yes, nerf herder, you can
oh,
say that.
Oh, God, once. Mike! You can't say that. That's their word.
She also said scruffy looking.
Ooh,
you know, kind of scruffy looking. Oh, dear God. Can you imagine if Star Wars had been done by all Minnesota actors?
Oh, God.
Oh, well, yeah, that's no moon, you know. That's no moon.
Oh, Oh, yeah? Is that right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Christ, yeah. Oh, Luke, you know, I'm your father. Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, I that, can see oh, it in the that's eyes. Not right. That's not right. No, I don't think dear. So. No.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Are you listening, Lucasfilm?
You weren't on any mercy mission this time, were ya?
God.
Anyway.
Please move on.
Yes. Dr. Lauren Buxbaum, and remember, this woman is a doctor, says,
she is.
C-3PO, because of his wonderful voice, attempts to divert R2-D2, and steadfast, despite professed doubts and reservations, loyalty to the cause. Remember, I only saw the first three in the theater when they came out 45 years ago. What other movies do I need? None at all. Zero, Lauren. Stay innocent.
Yeah. If you enjoyed them, just remember your enjoyment yep. or enjoy yep. your rememberment.
Charles Forsyth says, Cassian Andor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was unexpected, but a secondary character from a secondary movie was turned into the best thing Star Wars has done in decades. Wow. Controvertible.
No, not
Nick
really.
Nick Hoffman says, it has to be Vader for me. Okay, well, we'll wait till he tells us. Oh, what? Vader, not later. The first time I saw
really?
Star Wars.
Wow.
No episode number. His first sequence just blew me away. The scene where he's holding the rebel officer a foot off the ground by his neck and tossed him across the room like a rag doll had me hooked. Note, hated what they did to him at the end of episode 3.
Yeah.
Vader doesn't do cries of despair.
Never mind what they did at the end of Jedi when they take the helmet off and it's like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to hurt anyone. Oh, Luke, you're so nice. Thank you.
Okay. Wow. He was like, wow, James Earl Jones looks terrible.
And he's white now.
Yeah. Matthew Reisman says, I'm tempted to say a video game character like Revan or Revan, R-E-V-A-N.
I don't know.
I think the Knights of the Old Republic storyline is incredible, and Revan's plot twist was very fun. But that's also a cop-out because all video game characters, including the one Mike Luce will certainly name, allow for a ton of projection on the part of the player.
Not necessarily true.
Of course
true.
I like him. He's me. The same goes for Kyle Katarin or Starkiller.
Mm.
So, from non-interactive media, my favorite character is probably Obi-Wan.
Mm.
While it's all retrospective and retcons, when viewing the story now, he actually does learn and grow from a gifted learner who fully bought into the Jedi's teaching, someone who understands how those teachings failed, dedicating and sacrificing his life to ensure that Luke doesn't make the same mistake. While he knows Yoda is the only one left who can teach Luke, he still argues with him from beyond the grave. I like how the Clone Wars especially show him as a big brother figure before becoming the wise mentor we originally met him as. And he's really funny, but it's always a surprise.
I would also like to point out that I can't help but wonder if Mr. Reisman is in any way influenced by the fact that he looks like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Ah.
The young version, anyway. Yes.
Well, he looks like Ewan McGregor? Lucky fellow.
He does, with the beard and everything. So, and also, learn and grow forever. That's the Jedi theme song, just so you know.
Is it?
Yes.
Dave. Yoda, I suppose. He's cutish and has easy to imitate syntax. Okay, that why not?
Sure.
That's a good reason.
Go with a puppet.
Byron Ho says Din Djarin.
Oh.
His portrayal in The Mandarin made Star
Oops.
Wars interesting again for me. I'm assuming that that was an auto-correction of Mandalorian.
I'm almost positive it is.
Not that he wouldn't have been good in The Legend of the Ten Rings. Tyler Stewart says Admiral Thrawn.
Oh.
I have a weakness for Holmesian masterminds.
Okay.
Also, more than any other Imperial, he respects his enemies and rarely underestimates them.
No,
that's the point.
Thrawn is really dangerous. I mean, A,
yeah.
I really hate him. B, he's ridiculously effective, which is really
yeah.
the hard part.
That's the worst part.
Sometimes our heroes are, let's see how to put this, not.
Yeah, yeah. Brian Mundo says, R2-D2, and his explanation is, beep boop, which...
You can't say that on our show.
Hard to argue with.
Yes, it is.
And from the snowy ruins of Hoth, or Canada, we have Vince, says, I've always been partial to Leia Organa. I think she was a standout character, if only because she might be the only woman in the entire film besides Luke's aunt.
Yeah.
She's strong, competent, and takes charge, unlike most of the male characters. I still liked her in the last trilogy.
Hmm.
Well, thank you, Vince, and thank you all. But what about you, Mike? Who is your, and given your dedication to Star Wars, this is going to be interesting. Who is your favorite Star Wars character and why?
Well, I might have been going to pick a video game-based character. I might have, but now I'm not going to. No, I don't like to be guessed. Okay, it kind of is Cal Kestis. And one of the reasons I like Cal, and to be fair, yes, you're playing him, but there is a lot of story with him that you just watch in that video game. And again, I like Cal Kestis because as a Jedi, he actually learns things.
Ah, that's rare.
A lot of the other ones just keep swinging their lightsaber until something happens, you know, and hoping for the best. And I got to tell you, every Jedi lightsaber fight, the Jedi draws first every single time. Yep. Dedicated to piece my ass. So, oh, piece of
dedicated
ass?
No, wait, a piece of your ass?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, okay. This is the Tops and Bottoms series, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I really, really liked it in one movie. I really, really liked Finn character from The Force Awakens, which we did a couple weeks ago. And the reason being is that he had so much potential and he's really likable and he's a really good actor, which is something we had trouble with the original films, that they were fine, but Master Thespians, a lot of them weren't.
Yeah.
So I really liked John Boyega as Finn, and I really wish they had allowed him to grow and develop the way we thought he was going to. So I'm going to pick those two. What about you, Max? Okay. I know you're not a big Star Wars fan, but who do you like best?
I have seen all the movies. I do.
Let me guess. Sabretooth?
Yeah, no, don't be Greedo? Silly. Greedo? Nope. The true hero of the movies.
Bossk?
The guy who really just makes everything every scene he's in. And that is, of course, Red Six, a.k.a. Jack Tono Porkins. Come on, man. He's the heart of Star Wars. He absolutely is.
We were rewatching the second one, The Last Jedi. Yeah. And there is a scene where they're attacking the base thingy. And sure enough, there's a round-faced character in an X-Wing with a beard, and sure enough, he blows up, and it's like, they just keep making Porkins so they can kill them.
Yep. Afraid so.
Really?
Honestly,
not even Biggs?
No. I saw the deleted scene with Biggs in it. The guy that got to play him is so bad.
But he's got that cool mustache. Wedge?
He has a space mustache. No, I gotta say, it's a very specific Obi-Wan Kenobi, and that's Alec Guinness's. Mm. Nothing against Ewan McGregor, but, you know, Lucas crushed all the acting out of him in the prequels. Wouldn't let him actually do anything. And you can try to crush Alec Guinness as much as you want, but Guinness just ignored him and did exactly what he wanted. And I really like his version of Obi-Wan. He's the wise mentor, but he's got that little twinkle about him.
Mm.
He's not grim like every other good guy Jedi.
Mm.
For me, it's Alec Guinness as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you for giving us such great answers.
Yes, we love them so much. We like to sleep on piles of them at night, but our piles are getting a little flat, so we want new
ones. Don't talk
about
your piles.
I'll talk about them, and people love them. There are at least 8 different fan art websites dedicated to them.
That is so disgusting, I can't even put it into words. Please just give us the next poll question.
The next poll question, somewhat inspired by this week's, very simple. What's your favorite superhero movie?
Oh.
And we will give you the secret decoder ring way of answering it at the end of the show.
Mm.
But now,
seen anything good?
What you seen, Mike?
Well, I've started watching a show on Netflix called The Burrows.
Oh, I saw that.
It seems to be about a bunch of people living in a retirement community. Quite honestly, a really, really nice retirement community. How much does it cost to live there? And do you have any space? Also, I got to say, the sets, I'm looking at them going, do you guys know the people who made Pluribus? Because this feels really familiar.
Yeah.
But it has some people that we haven't seen in a while. Has Bill Pullman in it? Well, I don't know how much of it he's in, shall we say. But Bill Pullman's in it, and Gina Davis is in it, and Alfred Molina's in it, and a whole bunch
Alfred
of other
Molina's
people.
A star, yep.
Yeah. And it's, so far, we've watched the first 3 episodes, I think. And mm-hmm. it's actually entertaining, even though it's, I'm not sure exactly where it's going. There seems to be aliens involved. It's at least entertaining. Yeah, I like the people in it. And it's nice to see older actors getting some roles. Although I have to say, Alpha Merlina kind of doesn't fit in because he really doesn't feel that old. He feels like he's still like in his 50s. And it's like...
Well, it's the same. To me, that was the same with Gina Davis. She looks too young to be there.
Well, Gina Davis's character is thought of as young by at least one of the other characters because...
Hey, she's young at heart, if you know what I mean.
That's not where she's young. Anyway, I've been enjoying...
Hey-o.
I haven't seen any movies yet, but I've been enjoying that. How about you, Max? You seen anything?
Not really, no. I haven't come across anything new. I've been rewatching some old stuff. I watched Spider-Man Homecoming for the first time since it came out.
Does it hold up?
It holds up very well, I think.
Is that the one with Mysterio? No.
No, it's the one with the vulture. Is another...
I never thought, A, I'd want to see Michael Keaton in a superhero film, and B, they could make the vulture a good character, but man, is he a good
character. That was amazing. That is one of those examples where the movies take a really dumbass or unimpressive villain or hero and make them cool.
Yeah.
The vulture's an old guy with fake wings.
Oh, and a feather boa.
In the comic book. I'm sorry, he always looks to me that if Spider-Man didn't pull his punch, he'd kill him instantly.
Yeah.
Here, he's a badass. I like the little nods. The Shocker is in this briefly.
Well, they also kind of work in that very limited series from Marvel way back in the 80s, 90s, which was, what the hell do they call it? The Recovery Guys. Damage Control.
Damage Control, yes, yeah. They show up.
And mm-hmm. it makes total sense. Oh, you're having all these fights with these aliens or these supervillains and their stuff gets, you know, tossed to the ground. Well, of course somebody would come pick it up. And then...
Yeah, and you need this stuff to be under control because these are like alien death machines.
And then the city comes in and they're mean to the guys picking this stuff up. Are you asking for new supervillains? Because, really fun movie. And Michael Keaton is so good in that. And I don't generally care for him in other films. But, I mean, he's okay. He's fine as Beetlejuice and stuff. Mr. Mom, not so much. But
also, I got to say, Tom Holland, that was what really cemented... And for me this is the best Peter Parker I think we've seen.
Yeah.
Because he is absolutely convincing as a hyperactive teenager.
Yeah.
I know he was in his 20s, but he's still...
We'll come back to him.
He pulls it off, yeah.
Cool.
So, but that was it. So now let's get to... The facts. Well, as we said, this is the highest earner of 2018. The budget was $350 million.
There is no way they're going to make any money back on that. That's way too much.
They made over $2 billion with a B.
$2 billion?
Yep, $2 billion.
I wonder if that means there's going to be another one.
Oh, could be. This was the second most expensive movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the second most expensive superhero movie of all time. You can probably guess the first one up to that point was Age of Ultron.
Oh, ugh.
Only that one had a higher budget. This was also before the second part, Endgame, came out. This was the longest at 2 hours, 29 minutes. Endgame's over 3 hours.
Cripes. Okay, well, we're going to be coming back to that, too.
Yep. Of course, the bad guy in this is Thanos, which is the short form of the Greek name Thanatos, which means death in Greek, because Thanatos is the god of death.
That wouldn't make sense in the comics anyway, but okay.
At one point in the movie, Thor, Rocket, and Groot visit a Starforge called Nidvalir. I'm pronouncing it wrong. Nidvalir, where they meet a dwarf named Eitri, who's played by the awesome Peter Dinklage.
Yep.
In Norse mythology, Nidvalir is the home of the dwarves and one of Yggdrasil's nine realms, and Eitri is the guy who made Mjolnir. We'll get back to that.
Why?
Because I happen to like that when they show him making Stormbreaker, the axe, he starts screaming about, "I can't find the handle," which is a nod to the original myth of creating Mjolnir. When he was making Mjolnir, he was almost done, Loki distracts him, and he can't finish the handle. So it's very stubby, which is why Thor in mythology has to wear an iron mitten to catch Mjolnir when it comes back to him.
Okay.
I thought that was a nice touch.
Huh. I just thought it was to give Groot something to do, but okay.
Marvel Studios made the hashtag Thanos demands your silence to help stop spoilers.
Ah.
Although this is not explicitly stated in the movie, two of the Black Order, who we'll come back to, Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight, are supposed to be husband and wife. And you can just see it, the way they love each other.
This is also in one of my notes, but that is the first time I have heard any of their names.
Ah, they mentioned the Maw, the talker, but that's the Ebony Maw. Otherwise, yeah, we have no idea what their names are.
Nope.
There are close to 3,000 shots in this movie, and almost 2,900 of them are visual effects shots.
What? Please,
yeah,
measure my shock and surprise.
Yep. Although Joss Whedon directed the first two Avengers movies, he did not return to direct either of the next two.
Really? Why is that? I can't imagine.
Well, others admitted that Whedon had a difficult time directing such a close group of actors because every creative difference he had with a single person would often lead to a discussion with the others as well. Whedon later got embroiled in several public controversies concerning his professional behavior with his ex-wife and several former cast members, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which may also have affected his return. So they got the Russo brothers, who directed Captain America Winter Soldier and Civil War. They direct this and Endgame.
I liked both of those.
Mm-hmm. The film was shipped to theaters under the name Mary Lou. That's actually pretty good. I would not have seen that.
I wouldn't have seen Mary Lou, no.
Now, originally, the colors of the Infinity Stones are soul, green, time, orange, space, purple, mind, blue, reality, yellow, power, red. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they share the same colors from the Marvel Legacy version. Soul, orange, time, green, space, blue, mind, yellow, reality, red, power, purple. Movie ruined!
Yeah, because that's the only difference from the original storyline.
Yep, yep, that's it. Thanos' henchmen, the Children of Thanos, officially known as the Black Order, all have names, almost none of which are used on screen, but all have something to do with blackness or darkness.
Okay.
The big guy with the hammer, that is Cull Obsidian.
Ah.
Which basically means Black Death. The talker guy is Ebony Maw.
Okay.
Basically means Dark Mouth. Proxima Midnight is the only female member. And Corvus Glaive, the hooded figure wielding a scepter, has the name of the constellation Corvus, which is a raven. That's also where you get Corvid from.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Which one was Glup Shitto?
he was the one in the back. When Scarlet Witch and Vision see the attack in New York City, she's standing outside a shop in Edinburgh, Scotland. You can clearly see a sign inside the store that reads, "We will deep fry your kebab."
Yep.
There is a long-running joke, in the UK at least, that Scots will deep fry absolutely any food unnecessarily, which stems from, this is where the origin is, the infamous deep-fried Mars bar.
Yeah.
That was from Scotland.
Over there. Yeah, okay. I thought we were the ones who deep fried anything, but apparently the Scots do.
Nope.
What if you can deep fry haggis?
Tom Holland was not allowed to read the script for this movie since he revealed too many secrets from Spider-Man Homecoming. In one of the promotional videos for the movie, several of its cast members are in an interrogation room, refusing to reveal any spoilers, and Holland's mouth is conspicuously taped shut.
I don't know who is worse at that, him or Mark Ruffalo. Apparently Mark Ruffalo.
Thank you. The next one is Mark Ruffalo revealed that he was given a fake script due to his habit of accidentally spoiling past Marvel movies. He claimed in an interview, and they're pretty sure he was joking, the fake script was better than the real one. Ouch.
Yeah, there you go. Apparently he's quite the jokester. I heard that he likes to play pranks on set.
Little thing I just want to point out, Captain America's outfit and the way he looks in this movie is a little, comic book nerd. It's a tribute to the two times in the past when he stopped in the comic book where Steve Rogers stopped being Captain America. First one, he became the Nomad, who wore a very dark costume with gold discs up around the clavicles, like this costume. The second time, when he just became the Captain, he grew a scruffy-looking beard. In this, they gave him both.
Yeah, okay.
There is like a metric ton of trivia for this movie. Acres of it. I don't want to, that would be the whole show. Do you have anything you want to add?
No, because I'm looking at the cast list and it's like, who can we leave out? And I'm like, I'm not sure.
Nobody. We'll have to do this quick.
Yeah.
But first we have the plot.
Okay. Let's see. 20 minutes?
Yep. Here we go. Fortunately, understanding the plot of this movie is very simple. First, go watch Avengers Age of Ultron, Captain America the Winter Soldier, Captain America Civil War, the first two Guardians of the Galaxy movies, all three Iron Man movies, and of course, the first Black Panther movie. Easy peasy, watch your kneesy.
You left out Doctor Strange.
Oh, that helps, but yeah, done. Okay, good. So, of course, there's this evil Renaissance painter called Thanos the Madtician. Oh, wait. Sorry, that's Mad Titan. Yeah, I guess that makes more sense. Anyway, that so Thanos guy is all hot for fabulous jewelry. So he's got this blinged out, rather tacky gold glove that I think he stole from Michael Jackson. But to complete the look, he needs the 6 Infinity Stones. 6 super powerful gems from the planet MacGuffin, apparently. If he gets them, he can become like unto a god and stuff and save the universe by killing half the people in it. Good plan, T. Really, loving it. He's rolling with his chums, the Black Order, grabbing these stones and doing crimes. But who's standing in his way? Why, the entire Marvel Comics universe. We got the Avengers, we got Spider-Man, we got the Guardians of the Galaxy, we got Forbush Man, we've got Willy Lumpkin. Well, we should have had them. Lots of small side stories, but basically Thanos wants the magic dinguses. The super folks fight like crazy to stop him, and Thanos wins? Wait, hang on, that can't be right. So he wipes out half the people in the universe? Yay? This is a kid's movie?
The film. Well, I'm going to disagree. This is not a kid's movie.
Well, this really, really isn't right from the opening, but we'll get to that. Let's get to our cast.
Oh, boy.
Come on, starring basically everyone. You know, all those movies I mentioned, just it's them. We got Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, probably the most inspired casting in the MCU.
Well, let's face it. There would not be an MCU if he had not gotten him to do Iron Man, because the only reason this blew up the way it did is because he was Iron Man. Yes, the story was really good, too, but it's not entirely unbased on Iron Man comics.
Yeah.
The fact that they could sell Iron Man at all amazed me, because he's not like one of the big household name heroes like Spider-Man. Mm-hmm.
But Captain America, yeah.
Nailed
this. This is why he's the highest paid actor in the movie. He got $75 million for
Holy
this.
Holy Christ.
Which is 30 times what he got for Iron Man.
Well, and look what happened. So there you go.
Yep. Then we got Chris Hemsworth as Thor.
He should be bronzed.
Even I got to admit, he's pretty.
He's fun. You know, they were doing Thor, and I'm like, oh, you can't do that. That's gods. And never mind the way they talk and stuff. You can't do Thor. They did Thor, and he's perfect.
Yeah. Yep. It works. Mark Ruffalo, who is honestly one of the last people I would have thought, oh, yeah, he can play the Hulk. He is great as Bruce Banner. The Hulk, let's face it, is CG. The Hulk could be anybody.
I mean, he's no Eric Bauma, and he's no Edward Norton, but sure.
Yeah, but come on. The true Hulk is Lou Ferrigno, and we all know it.
No, I really like him. You can also, if you see him in any interviews, you can tell how much he's acting by the fact that he's generally not laughing, because Mark Ruffalo is a really funny guy, and he likes to laugh. So, yeah, he doesn't have a lot to do in this film, but I like what he has.
Yeah. We got Chris Evans as the Human Torch. Sorry, Captain America.
Another character I thought would never work. Like, you can't do this, and they nailed it.
Absolutely. He's terrific. And he's terrific in this, the darker, kind of harder age, because he's been living as a criminal after the events in Civil War.
They've redefined criminals so that it fits him. That's the difference. Yeah. And the Civil War thing was a much bigger thing in the Marvel Universe than it was in the movies, but it's still a very divisive and I think a really cool little side plot, and it's still working through this, and I think it works a little bit through Endgame, too.
We have my future wife, Scarlett Johansson, as Natasha Romanoff, the Black Widow.
The only thing I say against her in this film is she just doesn't have that much to do.
She usually doesn't. They don't do much with her, and I can kind of understand, because her and Hawkeye are really kind of... who isn't in this at all...
No.
...are really underpowered for the Avengers. I mean, you have literal gods... And then you have, I like the way you tetherball, sir. You want to fight Ultron? Got a guy with a bow and arrow and a spy. I mean, she's the greatest spy in the world, but there's no spying in this.
Didn't she have a widow sting or something where she had
she had like some zappy bracelets, but she's still just a person.
It's still when the lady from the Children of Thanos shows up and she's like, you're going to die alone. And Natasha, I'm sorry, shows up and she's like, she's not alone and like, oh, you're going down, lady.
I feel kind of... That scene, by the way, we'll get to that later, has, I think, one of the two best entrances in that movie. Just when Captain America appears in the shadows across from the train
and throws his mighty
shield.
That
is like a that is like a 20 die presence attack right there.
Yeah. Boy, there's a deeper.
Yep, there's a deeper. Then we got Don Cheadle as James Rhodes.
All right.
Again, he's terrific, but doesn't get to do anything.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I actually preferred Cuba Gooding in that role.
Really?
Yeah, there was something a little bit more. I liked his edge of forcefulness and humor. And he felt a little bit more like he was really having to straddle the line to keep people from arresting Tony Stark. I love Don Cheadle. I think he's an excellent actor. I love him. But I actually like Cuba Gooding better in the role. So,
okay. That's not just sure me. I agree, but it's interesting.
He also, and yeah, doesn't have much to do.
Pickle, then Benny. Pickle stick slappy batch as a Doctor Strange.
Penguin.
Penguin.
Dr. Penguin. His accent, I still am like, where are you from? Because I can't figure it out. But I think he makes a perfectly good Doctor Strange.
He's
I enjoy
a great
him.
Doctor Strange.
I love his very dry sense of humor. Mm-hmm. He and Tony Stark together, that's a great matchup. They're a lot of fun. Yep.
I was sorry they did not play off a thing that comes up in the comic books where Stark looks at him one day and says, you know why I like you? Because we are awesome facial hair bros. Because they have the same facial hair.
Oh, yeah. Kind
of. Yep. And then, of course, we have little Petey Parker, Tom Holland.
Tom Holland
is
excellent.
Great. He is so good.
He has one of my favorite scenes in the movie. We'll come back to this. And and the only reason for me that this scene has as much pathos as it does is because of him. But I love Tobey Maguire. I really liked him. But Tom Holland really is Peter Parker. He just totally is.
Yep.
Chadwick Boseman, I'm just mostly upset that he's gone.
That is so sad. What a loss.
Such a strength to his character.
He's not in this much.
No.
But then nobody is. We'll get to that. Everybody has there's so many characters.
Yeah.
But he's awesome. He just is.
Yeah.
Zoe Saldana as Gamora.
Yeah.
She is very cool. Not the way I ever pictured Gamora in the comic books, but she really works.
Well, she wore that skin-tight leotard green thing when she hung out.
You say that
Adam
like it's
Warlock.
A bad thing.
She also has a scene that really sells things, and that's when they're going to get the Soul Stone. And she's like, Thanos, I'm so glad I was here to see you get screwed over. Oh, seriously? Seriously?
Like
you're kidding.
Yep.
And it's a great scene that she sells.
Karen Gillan as Nebula.
I love the fact that we get to see her with hair on IMDb because I would never have known what she looks like.
Yep.
She does great. Also, not much to do, but she does great. Mm-hmm. Tom Hiddleston, he's some lesser known British actor that nobody cares about.
Yeah, some guy. Yeah, he is in the first 5 minutes. And,
That's right. He gets a miniseries later on. He's fine.
Yeah.
Paul Bettany is Vision.
Paul Bettany. Awesome.
Talk about a thankless role. The Vision, let's see how to put this, totally uninteresting as a character.
I don't agree with that. The thing is, he has huge potential, but they don't do anything with it.
No.
They start to, the whole idea of, to be like the human.
And in the comics, he has no emotions or anything. He's just this robot, and it's like, okay. Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda, she also doesn't have that much to do, but when she basically gets to the end, it's like, don't touch her, you bitch, just like at the end of Harry Potter.
pretty much.
She's fun.
She's great.
I love Anthony Mackie. I love him in
nothing to do. He's in like, three scenes? He has nothing to do, but he's
same
very
as Sebastian
cool.
Stan as Bucky Barnes.
Yep.
Idris Elba as Heimdall. We get to see him die, which is sad because...
It's real sad.
Yeah.
And, of course, Danai Gurira as Okoye, the leader of the Dora Milaje. She's awesome.
And
watching her teamed up with the Black Widow is so cool.
Yeah. That little triumvirate there at the end where we've got Wanda and Black Widow and her. That's just like... you've got a little super team right there. You don't need anybody else. Those three... maybe get the science... I can't remember her name. The science woman from Wakanda. Yeah. Get those four together and you've got a new Avengers. You don't need anybody else.
I loved her line, after... Scarlet Witch shows up and blasts Proxima Midnight. He's like, why wasn't she on the field the whole time?
What's the definition of her power again? Oh, she can do whatever she wants. Oh, okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's useful. Mm-hmm. Why isn't she an Infinity Stone? That's what because if I remember in the comics, didn't she have mental powers? Did it eventually become magic? I forget.
Wait, which one?
Wanda Maximoff.
In the comics, she was a mutant.
Oh.
And then later, studied magic, chaos magic, which didn't exist, and then it did, and she's gone through a lot of retcons.
Okay. Well, she can't be a mutant because we can't have that, not until the upcoming Avengers movie, because apparently there's going to be mutants in that, and they don't look like this island Earth, neither.
Before we talk about the actual movie, well, I do want to bring up a piece of film history.
Okay.
This year is the 70th anniversary of the great Roger Corman movie, It Conquered the World, starring Peter Graves, Lee Van Cleef, and Beverly Garland.
Yeah.
And I want to take this opportunity to remind you all that man is a feeling creature and thus the greatest in the universe.
If you
and
have
also
not,
that Peter Graves went to the University of Minnesota.
If you have not seen the MST3K episode of this, it's one of their classics. But even just watch the film because it is Roger Corman with a, shall I put it this way, corral of favorites that are all giving it their all. I mean, Lee Van Cleef, Peter Graves, Beverly Garland, they're all dead serious. And then there's this giant cucumber with fangs.
And crab, lobster claws or something.
And quite honestly, I love the scene where Beverly Garland goes in there to kill it because it's messing with her husband and her world. She's awesome.
She is.
Yeah. So happy birthday. It conquered the world.
Well done, you guys. And now to a movie.
Don't watch the cheap makeup Zontar thing from Beyond Venus because that's
absolutely not. That's a ripoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now back to a movie that costs more than $11.
Yeah.
So I got to say, you were saying this is not a kid's movie. You ain't kidding. I mean, the opening, it's like, oh, here we go. Here's a colorful superhero. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They killed Heimdall. They killed Loki.
Yeah.
They killed Kenny.
Those
bastards.
Yeah. My first note was, things look bad for our heroes.
Yeah.
I think I wrote that note three times throughout the film because there's a lot. This is a downward turn for our Avengers friends. Initially, they had. All right, let's get this out here. You kind of mentioned it in the recap. You cannot watch this film on its own. You can't.
See that it's possible.
You physically can. But you will sit there going, who's that guy? Who's that guy?
Why is that guy doing that? Who are these two? Are we supposed to care?
Yeah.
Yeah. For better or for worse, and I still admire them for doing that, this entire thing is a culmination of 19, count them, 19 previous movies, as it should be.
Yeah.
This is a comic book spectacle, and you can't have that without a whole lot of past issues. Out of asterisk, see issue 125, whatever. Well,
this one movie is a crossover like three times over. This was the, well, to be fair, the original Infinity Gauntlet storyline, whatever, crossed over from one annual to another. You had to buy a bunch of annuals, and the annuals, as the name implies, were a big end of year double sized issue from Marvel. And this thing was going through the entire, this was before Secret Wars, well before Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a big, big story. And Thanos at the time was a big, big character, which when they started doing the Avengers, I'm like, well, there's no way they're going to do Thanos because nobody knows who he is. And that first Avengers movie where there's a little thing at the end, it's like, holy crap, they're doing Thanos. Really?
Yeah. My first thought was, really? You're going to, in effect, start? I mean, Loki, sure, but you're going to bring in Thanos? He's like one of the biggest bads of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
That's kind of, why? That's kind of spending a lot of ammunition right away. What did I know? They got 18, 19 movies out of him.
To be fair, you really only get three. Because while he's in the background for a lot of the other stuff, the main plot is driven only, I guess the main plot for the superheroes, Marvel superheroes, was driven by him in Avengers 1, 3, and 4. Otherwise, it's not really him directly. Yeah, he pops in and goes, oh, but that's about it.
Yeah, but the Infinity Stones play a part in virtually all of them. Age of Ultron is based entirely on the Mind Stone. That's where Ultron came from.
But that's not necessarily Thanos. It eventually becomes him.
No, but he's
the one
who wants it. Yeah.
It's really more the stones themselves. And there's a lot of stuff that they kept deciding to do from the Marvel comics. I'm like, you're not going to do that, are you? You're not going to do that. Doctor Strange means there's actual magic. You're doing Doctor Strange. Oh, and you did it really, really well.
Yeah.
Well, the first one anyway.
Yeah, the second one, not so much. This, I love him in this. I love Wong in this.
Yeah. Oh, I love it when he's just like, we don't have material possessions. I have no money. Go buy me a sandwich.
I got $200. Rupees. How much is that? It's about a buck and a half.
Yeah. All right. If you're not a Marvel fan, coming to these movies, I still think probably worked if you like superheroes at all.
Yeah, they were very smart.
They introduced the characters in their own. I mean, if there was an actual giant Kevin Feige plan for this arc, it was brilliantly executed. Even the movies that weren't great, Iron Man 2. You know, it didn't matter because there was enough other stuff that was good. If I had to go back and look, I'd probably say 2/3 of the 19 up to this point movies were really worth watching. And even the ones that weren't, you could probably skip them and know what was going on. But as a Marvel fan, I never, ever thought they could do anything remotely right. I just didn't think it was going to work.
Yeah, and every time, for me anyway, they proved me wrong.
Yeah, well,
because they've done every, all up in, what, as they called phase one or phase two or whatever the hell those are.
Whatever.
Up through Endgame.
Yeah.
They knocked it out of the park in terms of portraying the characters. Even the Guardians of the Galaxy, which found out they weren't doing the classic ones. You know, we don't mention like Chris Pratt. He was in there. You know, Peter Quill. Oh,
yeah. No.
And Dave Bautista as Drax.
Yeah.
Palm Klementoff as Mantis. Talk about another set of characters who are so much better in the movies than they are in the comic books.
Yeah. The only reason Mantis, they ever did comics of the Drax, was to keep the copyright. Because they're
dull. Yeah. They are pretty dull characters. And Mantis is adorable.
Yeah.
In the Guardians movies and in this.
Well, that's because she's here to kick names and take ass.
Yes, they're the Avengers. They're the world's mightiest heroes. Like Kevin Bacon?
Yeah, I...
By the way, if you ever get a chance, watch the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special. It's worth it.
It is a big gamble because these films obviously cost a ridiculous amount of money, not least of which because half of the characters aren't actually there.
And the rest of them are expensive.
We didn't even mention the guy who plays Thanos because he's not there.
James Brolin, he's never, you know, he didn't meet any of the other actors until the premiere.
Well, why would he?
He was never on set with them.
No. And his voice, he does a great job as Thanos. You know, a character I never thought could come alive. This giant, ridiculously expensive, huge, blowy-up arc that made us all tired of superheroes, in general, worked really well. And as a comics fan, for me anyway, you're a much bigger Marvel fan than I was, it was just like, I just didn't believe this could happen. I totally, like, because we'd seen stuff before, like Reb Brown as Captain America. And the
Howard the Duck.
Or the 1970s Spider-Man TV show. I mean, the Hulk TV show had some good points to it.
It had some heart to it.
Yeah. I don't even remember who played Doctor Strange in that dreadful TV film with the bad Thor in it.
Nobody does.
No, the sort of 70s softcore porn version of Doctor Strange.
Part of it is special effects technology has reached a point where the costumes don't look ridiculous and the special effects aren't laughable. That's a big part of it. Because think about how bad Iron Man could look.
Oh, yeah. Really, really bad. Especially the original one. Very bad. Great one.
Yeah, you know, they've done Thor. They were the Trial of the Incredible Hulk. Incredible Hulk Returns. Thor shows up and he looks idiotic.
Yeah. So here's something that they do in the comics very often. And I wanted to ask you if you thought that it translated well to the films, especially this one, since that's one we're talking about. And that is the mix of seriousness and humor.
I think in this it works really well. There are films it doesn't work so well in. There are times where I think it's a little awkward. To me, one of the big scenes is when Peter Quill and Gamora are on the ship and she is begging him to promise her that if Thanos catches her, that Peter will kill her.
Because she knows something.
Because she knows where the Soul Stone is, and she doesn't want him to have that information. And, you know, they're talking about how they love each other. And then we cut over, and there's Drax standing there eating Zagnut bars or Zagulon nuts or whatever he calls them. And does this whole thing of, no, I have perfected the ability to stand perfectly still, so I am invisible. By the way, that was apparently an in-joke because Dave Bautista had to stand perfectly still for hours while they put the makeup on him.
Yeah, I bet.
So he got really good at it.
He's still not invisible.
No. Hi, Drax. Damn it! I
mean, it's interesting because...
I think that didn't work. But otherwise, yeah, I think it does.
They never get too serious for too long.
Yeah.
And that's... Quipping is a big part of most of the characters in the Marvel Universe.
Huge.
One of my favorite lines in this, because he's having trouble, apparently... Something scared the Hulk, and if something scares the Hulk, he don't want to come out no more. And there's one point where Bruce Banner, he's in the giant armor, and he's trying to get the Hulk to come out, and he won't. And he finally just gives up and says, screw you, you big green asshole. And it's a really big fight that will come back to the end fight. And I think it's a good balance. I think it's maybe it's one of the ways they're trying to keep it from seeming too overwhelming for kids who did go to see this. I don't know. Mm. But in general, I think a lot of times we say you can't shift the tone like that. And comics are so good at it. But I think in general, they do pretty well here.
Yeah, I think it works. I really do. One of the relationships I really love is Iron Man and Spider-Man. Tony Stark and Peter Parker. It's so adorable. He always calls him Mr. Stark. I love that.
Yeah, but you know that he looks up to him like a dad.
Oh, he does. He's totally a father figure. And Tony knows that too. And he's both touched by it, but he has absolutely no idea how to handle it.
But, and this is where I wanted to come back to Tom Holland's performance. When the snap happens, basically we're losing half of everything. Half of all our characters are going away, and it's seemingly random. And you watch people disappear, and it's stunning. But when we get to that moment where Peter Parker feels it happening to him, you see him. He is really scared. Really, really scared. And who does he call out for? Mr. Stark, I don't want to go.
And heartbreaking.
It is. And it works so well. And that, to me, that his performance sold that whole thing. Because up till then, it's like, wow, we're losing. But when Peter, like, I get teary when he does that. I really do, because you feel for them.
I think the other moving moment is with when the Scarlet Witch does agree to kill the Vision, to destroy the Mind Stone.
And this is where I got to give Peter Quill credit. He tries. He aims the gun. He pulls the trigger. It's just that Thanos makes them bubbles.
Yeah.
And Wanda does too. She does destroy the gem as much as it hurts her. And I kind of wonder, I don't remember having not rewatched it, but I kind of wonder if that wasn't what kind of eventually drove her to go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
The fact that the Vision was dead is what in effect inspires her to do the whole WandaVision thing.
Right.
Yeah. She recreates basically a fake Vision. Yeah. No, that is. That's a big part of it.
And when you can make people care about these larger-than-life, four-color characters, I think you're doing something. You're bringing some emotion into something that is inherently silly, because it is.
It is. It totally is silly.
Strap on your underwear and go fight crime. Okay. Yep.
Panties and capes. Panties and capes. All superheroes wear panties and capes. And, and they make you care about these characters. That is really difficult to do, and they nail it. I got one plot point I want to ask you.
Just one.
There are many.
There is much plot in this movie. Oh my God.
Huge, huge. But there's one thing. This is the one part that makes me go, hang on. Thanos' whole motivation in this, in the comic book, I always thought it was much more interesting. The idea that he is in love with the personification of death. He worships death. That's why he wants to kill so many people as a tribute to her. In this... It's because in his own twisted way, he thinks he's helping. He says there's too many people in the universe and not enough resources, so I'm going to eliminate half the people. Why doesn't he double the number of resources?
Because that's not how he thinks. He's a person of destruction. I don't really have a problem with that because I find that a lot more understandable and relatable than the, oh, death, you personification of the end of all mortality in this robe and a skeleton face. I love you so much. I will show you how much I love you by killing half of everybody, which, of course, in the comics is like, that's her job. Why are you taking her job from her?
Yeah, it actually doesn't impress her.
No,
it impresses her too much. She's, she still won't speak to him.
I think she feel threatened?
No, she says... her herald or her spokesman says, oh no, she understands. It's not that you're her equal now. You're her superior. So she isn't worthy to speak to you. Which, of course, I just think is death going, Well, fine. If you don't know why I'm mad, I'm not going to tell you.
I'm certainly not going to tell you. Yeah, no, I didn't like the death thing in the comics. I'm glad they changed that. Yeah. I also can see him being single-minded. He's like, nope, I'm going to do this. He's very bullheaded with everything else. He's decided this is the right answer.
That's the way his mindset works.
Yeah.
I like the fact that they point out, I mean, he spells it out, but it's true that there is the parallels between him and Tony Stark. When he runs into Stark the first time, he goes, oh, Stark. He goes, you know who I am? He goes, yeah, I know you. You know, he says, yeah, you're like me. You're a futurist.
Yeah.
You see the way things are going to be. You can't help it. You can't stop yourself. You don't want to. It's a terrible burden, but we both see it. We just see it differently.
There's a couple of the Avengers that he shows grudging respect for. The other one is Cap. I love Cap. Cap never stops. He's fighting Thanos. He is so punching outside his weight limit.
He is fighting a god, and he's when you get down to it, he's a guy with a hunk of metal.
Yeah, he's stronger.
And he won't stop.
And he doesn't. And he's sitting there beating on Thanos at the end. And eventually, and it's not going to take him down, but he's still doing it. Eventually, Thanos just is like, damn, your chihuahua is feisty.
The look that they do, and again, that's a very impressive to the CGI.
Mm-hmm.
The look he gives, like, how is this human doing this to me? Have I not killed him yet?
And Cap, spoiler, will have another scene that's even better just like this in the last movie. And just Cap, he is the character I really thought they couldn't do because he's just like, he was, you know, always the Boy Scout, the goody two-shoes, golly willikers. And they managed to pull it off and not lose anything about Cap. Really, really well done.
He's still, you get the feeling that this guy is at heart a soldier. He is a fighter. That's what he is. What do you think of the final huge battle?
Oh, dear gods, it's so captivating, I stopped writing notes. And I've seen this film like two or three times before this.
You can't take your eyes off the screen.
No. It's exciting. It's fun. And you saw somebody die, a major character die in the first 10 minutes of the movie, so you don't know if someone's not going to make it or not, because it's possible.
I thought it was awesome, and it's so much fun to see so many of the characters from Black Panther show up again.
Yeah. I love them when they're doing their little chants and
stuff.
All right, there's a beep I have to throw in. I get really, it gets me going. They're thumping their spears and stuff. Yep. Those guys are badass. When
Thor shows up with Stormbreaker, which is partly made out of Groot's arm. That is the second best entrance in the movie.
Yeah.
And he's just, bring me Thanos!
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, you know, if I were Thanos, my shorts would be full of bricks about this point.
Purple bricks.
Yeah. The snap itself, the end of the movie, the first time I saw that, I remember going, wait a sec. No, they can't. What? Even though I knew that did happen in the comic book, it was like, oh my God, they're killing half the characters.
Yeah.
And again, it's so heartbreaking because most of them just disappear. They don't, they just crumble. There's no crying. There's no apparent pain. Peter's the only one who gets time to register fear. But Rocket watching Groot disintegrate?
Yeah.
That is moving.
And they're two fake people. They're not even characters. Like, they're not there. They're not
there.
No actors.
It's friggin' Vin Diesel saying one line, I am Groot.
Or in this case, I am...
Yeah.
Yeah, and also at the post-credit scene, the character I did not expect to lose was Nick Fury.
Yeah,
oops.
And we lose. Yep. And that, I remember, that. What did you think of that little last bit? Because I remember this came out before her movie did.
Right.
When his pager goes on. Did you get that the first time you saw it?
To be fair, I don't remember because there'd been a lot of hype about Captain Marvel, so I'm not sure, but probably not. And of course, to me, Captain Marvel was a guy, but that's okay. Carol Danvers, she was the second Captain Marvel,
She started as Ms. Marvel, then she was Captain Marvel.
Ms. Okay.
Yep. Well, it was the 70s.
She wasn't Dazzler.
Yeah.
But, you know, unfortunately, we have come to the time for our own snap.
The finish.
So, Max.
You
saw this when it came out. You may have even seen it before it came out.
No, I saw it when it came out.
What did you think of it then?
I really liked it. Again, I was just blown away by the ending, and I'm like, how long do we have to wait for Endgame?
Yeah.
It was only a year, and I was impressed by that. I mean, at least they weren't, like some places, making you wait 3 years for a sequel.
Well, considering how much it took to make this 2.5-hour film. Yeah, but here's the thing. It's not been that long. It's been 8 years.
Yeah.
We've been through a lot of Marvel since then.
A lot of Marvel.
Most of it, not good.
Yeah.
Rewatching it now, what did you think?
Honestly, by comparison, I think it's even better. Because now we've seen what happens. It's like, oh, you don't do everything right, do you?
No.
This was the last gasp. I'm not saying some of the Marvel properties that have come out since, some of them are good. Most of them are eh.
Yeah.
But I think this was the last hurrah. I think Endgame was one of the last great pieces of the MCU.
Yeah.
And they haven't matched it since. What about you? You saw it. What did you think when you saw it first?
Oh, I loved it. And I also did not see it. And here's the thing. I read the Infinity Gauntlet saga thing when it came out, right back in the 80s. So I did not remember the story that well. I remembered some of the characters. If I remember correctly, the Adam Warlock character, who they thankfully did not bring out, I don't think that would have worked at all, tries to go after Thanos and he gets sucked into his own gem. Yeah. And it's like, oh, here's all my friends whose lives I ended and I've been brooding about for the past 12 issues. Maybe I'll just stay here. And they have to coax him out to help stop Thanos. And I think they just turn him to stone. It was one of those times when I was just letting the movie pull me along. I didn't care. I didn't want to know ahead of time. I didn't want to try to guess. And I was not prepared for the ending at all. And I was not prepared for the beginning of Endgame, because the beginning of Endgame is depressing.
Oh, it really is.
But it's also really good.
Yep.
I liked it a lot then, and I can still just sit and watch and really enjoy this movie now. Yeah, you can't watch it on its own. Cannot. In some ways, that's a weakness.
Although, I'd be curious if any of you out there ever did see it without seeing any of the others or only seeing one or two, I'd like to know how did it work for you?
I bet they just wouldn't care. There is something, though, that's really interesting to me about this movie that I hadn't thought about the other times I've watched it, and that is, this movie is going against the usual American ideal. It's not about a lone rebel figure fighting against the majority. The teams only succeed at all because they come together and look for help. Cap goes to Wakanda. Hulk goes to Doctor Strange and Cap. The Guardians finally listen to Iron Man and Doctor Strange. There is a lot of ego in this film, but all of them put it aside because they have to work together. And
it's
if they
all about
don't,
the team.
Yeah, and that is not the usual thing in the usual American film. It's the lone cowboy, and he's always right, and the
loose cannon,
which I'm so tired of. And I hadn't thought about that when I first watched this, or the second or the third time, and I'm watching it this time, and it's like, all these separate teams still have to work together. Thor can't do anything alone. He needs the rabbit to help him.
How is it that he doesn't know the difference between a rabbit and a raccoon?
They don't have raccoons on Midgar, in Asgard.
They've got a squirrel. They must have the others.
Ratatoska's different. Why do these names just leap into my head? Why should I know who he is? Oh, well, whatever. So, yeah, if you have not watched the Avengers films, you could probably get away by just watching the Avengers films.
Maybe, yeah.
But it's a big, giant chunk of fun. And it's violent. And there's torture in one scene. Sorry, Nebula. Yeah. Oops. But
also Doctor Strange. He gets tortured.
Yeah, a little bit in the cheek, but it's quite honestly, he's not screaming and writhing as much as she is. And she's literally being pulled apart. That was like visually. Ugh.
Yeah, that was nasty.
I think they took Earth's Mightiest Heroes from a bunch of four colored comic books and made them really, really fun and work really well on a big screen. And quite honestly, I recommend this film, if for no other reason, so you can watch Endgame and understand what's going on there.
Yeah.
There's parts of Endgame, it has time travel in it. There's parts of Endgame that I'm not that fond of, but the end of this whole thing is, well, that might be for another show.
Yeah.
But what's not for another show is our poll question. Max, would you go over that, please?
Yes, it is. We want the answers for our next show. So it is for another show. See, I've run rings around you logically.
No,
but
the poll question is for this show. The answers are for next show.
But this week was next week last week.
Just give it the question.
The question is simply, what's your favorite superhero movie?
Yeah.
And you can tell us the answer to this in your secret identity by using the special Max Mike phone. Actually, you can at 617-398-7266. 617-398-7266. That's our hotline.
Ooh.
Or if you want to go more modern, you can email us at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can go to our website, which is also maxmikemovies.com. That's just what we want you to think. And leave a comment. You can find us on social medias.
Blue Sky or Facebook, go on. It's just, it's social media. Social media. An English major can't pronounce social
media. Socialized mediation.
Blue Ski and Facebook.
Yes, we're there. We're on many, many podcast apps. But now, as we have gone to
great heights,
sublime, we shall now go to the redonkulous. So this was the biggest moneymaker of 2018.
$2 billion.
$2 billion. Mike, what was the biggest plop fest of 2018 that we are going to have to watch for next week?
Well, I don't think you can be that mean and call it a flop. It made $2 million.
Oh, wow. Eventually. What was the budget? Like $100,000? $200,000?
I think it was six.
Ooh.
And I've not seen this film, and I don't think you have either. It is a film that I think forgot existed, if I even knew it existed. It is not, however, a Roger Corman film, so I can...
No.
This is 2018's Kevin Spacey vehicle, Billionaire Boys Club.
Oh, sure. Billionaire Boys what?
Yeah, I know nothing about this film. But I have a good guess as to why it may not have done as well as it could have.
Yes, and his initials are KS.
Yeah, that stands for KS. Anyway, KS Masterpiece. Anyway, join us next week for Billionaire Boys Club so you don't have to.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.